Brian Alcoholic. Hi, Brian. Hey, it's an honor and privilege to be here speaking tonight. Congratulations to the celebrants, Leslie, Tim, Ruben, Walter. Huge deal. Thank you. You know, what I was thinking about, what I was going to speak about tonight, I would say my story, like most of our story, does not begin with alcohol. See, my story begins with home. Or more specifically, the search for home. See, I grew up in Northeast Ohio, right along the Rust Belt, 80s, 90s. And if you know anything about Youngstown, Ohio, during that time period, you already know majority of this story. You see, steel mills collapsed, poverty, addiction, homelessness. Everyone grew up angry. You know, but I say, my mother and my father divorced when I was 2 years old. So everything about my father was filtered through other people. From what I was told, my father was abusive, alcoholic, no good father. But interestingly enough, you know, steel mills being stripped away, the environment to which I grew up, I was still surrounded by love. Now that may sound like a contradiction, right? How could I grow up in this tough environment but still feel love? My grandmother's home was love. My grandmother's home was everything to me. The funny thing about it is my grandmother and my grandfather, they ran a liquor house. So back east on the East Coast, they would go and get the huge bottles of alcohol, and then they would sell it at the house for about $2 a shot. So my grandmother's house was filled, weekends, weekdays, doesn't matter. Anybody and everybody was coming through to my grandmother's house. When my grandmother ran this house, you know, there's still love there, right? When I think about my grandmother, I think about bingo. She loved bingo. I think about fried chicken. I think about jazz music playing all night long. I think about card games. I think about laughter. I think about spaghetti. And it just so happens that tonight was spaghetti night. So if that ain't a sign for you, I don't know what is. You know, alcohol was everywhere. But to me as a child, I didn't feel that it was unsafe. You see, me growing up, as a child, I saw the adults connecting. There was ritual, card games, music, partying, laughter. That was the life that I was introduced to. See, when I walked in my grandmother's home, any problems that were bothering me remained outside the door. I was comfortable there. I was accepted. I didn't need to perform. I didn't need to do anything. Love was in abundance. But see, without my father, I felt that absence. You see, the love that I received from my grandmother's home was the love that I didn't even know I needed. The love that saved me before I even knew I needed saving. I need you to understand, as a child, seeing these adults in the environment where I come from, were abandoned buildings, places that used to be homes. The complete opposite of what you see out here in San Diego. You see buildings being built up. Well, when I was growing up, I see them being torn down. I seen people reduced to habits, identity flattened to addictions, humanity reduced to character. As a child, I recall a story of, well, not a story, but I recall two individuals that I will always remember. But the sad thing about it is I would never know their name. Because where I come from, people were known for their addictions and their behaviors. When I grew up, there was a man, they called him Chinch. And I don't even know his real name, and I don't even think that his nickname was supposed to be Chinch. You see, in Ohio, we have four seasons. We have summer, winter, spring, fall. But Chinch wore a trench coat every day. Along with Chinch, and again, like I said, his name was probably Trench, but during the drunken slur when he introduced himself, he probably said Chinch. I don't know. I will never know his name, and that's kind of sad to me. He had his partner, and his name was Quarter Beer. You see, and this is funny to me as a child, and even now, but what's sad is that, you know, when addiction and alcoholism strips us from our name, strips our name from us, you know, for a long time, and forgive my language, I was known as Drunk Ass Brian, you know. But at the end of it and through it all, like underneath all that, they're still a human being, you know. When I think about Ohio, I think about my Aunt Jean. Again, love. There's no performance, there's no conditions, you know. And when I think about my Aunt Jean, I don't think of abstract ideas. I don't think of her speaking the words, I love you, because my Aunt Jean created it. When I think of my Aunt Jean, I think about peanut butter cookies. I think about lasagna, which her recipe should be written on gold scrolls, held safe in an underground bunker somewhere. I think about Luther Vandross playing in the background. I think about the premium cable channel she had, Home Box Office, you know, HBO. I think about the laughter, and I think about, you know, people are complicated. You see, because my Aunt Jean, she drank. She loved her black velvet. I've never had it. But that's what her drink of choice was. My Aunt Jean was known for getting behind the wheel while drinking. My Aunt Jean was in about four accidents. My Aunt Jean smashed cars. But to me, my Aunt Jean was never unsafe. Never unsafe. And you see, Gemma, when I love people the way my aunt Jean loved people. Again, love was created. It goes beyond just speaking it, saying I love you. You know, because of my Aunt Jean, I can show up. Because of my Aunt Jean, I prefer to cook for my daughters. The preparation, the presentation, being present. When I think about my grandmother's house and how I grew up, I used to love television, black and white television. I'm thinking, I Dream of Jeannie. I Love Lucy, The Three Stooges, The Andy Griffith Show. You know, and then when we go into the 90s, I'm thinking about Family Matters with Steve Urkel and Carl Winslow. I'm thinking about The Fresh Prince. You see, when I grew up, I was bullied a lot. I was overweight. I didn't feel like I fit in anywhere. When I was going to school, and the funny thing about it is when you grow up poor in a place where everybody's poor, you don't know that you're poor until you get a little bit older. And kids can be brutal. The clothes I wore were 2 years late in a fashion sense because they were my brother's clothes, you know. So I'm getting picked on. We didn't have a lot of money. We had a lot of love, but, you know, sometimes these love ain't gonna pay the bills, you know. So we grew up broke. Picked on. Picked on so bad that the stress became so much. So bad that my body betrayed me. I'm losing my hair. I developed bald spots. And what you think those kids did then? Oh man, they called me spots. You know, I need you to understand that type of pain, that type of shame enters your bones. You know, that shame followed me everywhere I went. I developed this thing to where I need to prove everybody wrong. So when those television shows came on, it wasn't entertainment. One, it was instructions to life. And two, it was an escape. You see, Carl Winslow stayed. Andy Griffith led with wisdom. Uncle Phil showed up. And so when I'm growing up without my father and I'm seeing all these television shows that usually about 30 minutes, and once the episode is over, everyone's still there in the episode. They work through all their problems, you know. And so at that very moment, I decided when I have my children, I'm not going to be like my dad. I'm going to be there. I'm going to stay. So, you know, go through high school. Make it through the concrete jungle, as I would say, because it was brutal growing up. I already determined that I'm leaving Youngstown, not because I hated Youngstown, but Youngstown could easily strip me from my essence, or strip my essence from me. So I joined the Navy. My girlfriend became pregnant with my son, Brian Jr. So now I get the opportunity to be the dad that I never had. You know, I used to visit Virginia Beach, Virginia. My Uncle David was in the Navy. And, you know, I would see that structure. You know, so when we would visit in the summers, I would see the ocean. Water regulates me like no other. I love the ocean. My Uncle David was married. He had a family, well put together. That's what I want to be. So I did that. I joined the Navy, get to boot camp, graduate boot camp. Like I said, my son is on the way. I got married at the age of 18. You know, get my orders to Virginia Beach, Virginia. So there's that familiarity. I'm familiar with that. Let's go. We doing this. You know, so for the first time in my life, you know, things were looking good. They were coming together. You know, I get to my first duty station. I am crushing it because I got something to prove. I go on my first deployment, which happened to be 9 months long. Come back from that deployment, you know, my wife is distant, and I couldn't understand it. Not the same. I would soon find out that she was pregnant by another man. The devastation, because at this time I'm only 19 years old. The image of what I had of family evaporated in an instant. And the funny thing about it is, you know, television didn't prepare me for this. Could you imagine Ricky Ricardo coming home to find out Lucy's pregnant by another man? You know, Andy Griffith didn't have that episode. Carl Winslow didn't experience that. So off goes my wife. She takes my son to Ohio. And now I'm starting to feel like my father. I'm only an E3. I'm not making a lot of money at this point in time. So me going to Ohio is kind of out of the question, you know. So I'm not seeing my son. By the time I turned 21, that's when I started drinking. And then I realized I don't have any more problems. You see, I need you to understand, when I took those drinks, anything that bothered me no longer bothered me. And on top of that, success after success after success throughout my Navy career. So I'm crushing it. I'm doing good, but I never processed that pain. and ended up getting in another marriage before I even processed the stuff that went through in the old marriage. But the Navy kept rewarding me. Advancements, promotions, awards, you know. On the outside, I'm well put together. On the inside, I am drowning. But things started to work out, right? I think I can, you know, I'm drinking, but I'm holding my life together. I'm still advancing. I'm still being successful, you know. Then my wife and I get pregnant with my twin daughters, Ava and Brielle. Good, let's go, right? Then I get accepted into a very prestigious Navy program, the Navy Harbor Pilot Program. Surprise, another daughter on the way, my middle daughter, Brianna. Okay, so I'm in this program and I'm thinking that everything is going the way that it should be. I got a house now, I got the car. So everything that you see on, that I've seen on the television, I'm doing it. This is happening. This is the way it's supposed to be. Even got a dog. Let's go. Right? Then there's some inequality. I watched others succeed with the support that I wasn't getting. In my marriage, it wasn't ideal. It wasn't, you know, going through some things here. Bills were being concealed. I say, I go to work, I come home. If I need some money, I go to the ATM, it's there, I'm good. I don't, what is this bill stuff? So I relied heavily on my wife to make sure that these bills were taken care of. They weren't, you know. Lose the house. Drop out of the Navy Harbor Pilot Program. Oh, surprise, fourth daughter's on the way, Annika. Wow. I get orders to San Diego. This is 2013. And to my surprise, alcohol is a lot easier to get out here on the West Coast than it is in the Midwest and on the East Coast. See, on the East Coast, you have the state stores, you know. In some places, you can't even buy beer or wine on Sundays. So you mean to tell me when I go out there and I walk to a CVS, there's hard liquor on the shelves? I go inside a corner store. Yes, there's beer and wine, but there's also hard liquor in there. You know, by the time I got to San Diego, my drinking was at an elite level. The same amount of success that I had in the Navy, I would equate that to my success as drinking, because I'm going in, because I haven't processed anything. But I was medicating everything. So again, success, I'm still advancing, I'm still promoting, still looking good, still doing what I need to do. But you know, my wife got kind of tired of that. We come up with the idea to save some money. You know, she moves to Ohio. And a part of me was relieved. I can drink when I want, how much I want. I don't have to buy three bottles of alcohol because I bought three. One for the garage that nobody knew was there. One that she could see that I was drinking. And the third was in case I ran out of the other two. See, I'm in the garage drinking every day. And she wouldn't think that I'm drunk because she sees the bottle on the counter. It got to the point where I would be in the garage. Or even before I get to the garage, I go to the Navy Exchange package store, because it's cheaper there. And it used to be a thing where I would buy top shelf premium, but then when it didn't matter anymore, whatever was on sale. And then next thing you know, I'm drinking out of a plastic bottle, because who cares? The effect is gonna be the same. And see, with me, and I need you to understand, when it comes to alcohol, enjoyed what it gave me. I enjoyed the feelings that came with it. I enjoyed the fact that whatever I was going through was no longer there. Because, excuse my vulgarities, when I was drinking, I did not give a fuck. You know, once my wife and children left back to Ohio, I had that relief. But I also experienced loneliness like I never experienced before. I get off work, I come home, I don't have these little girls greeting me. I don't hear these little voices in the house no more. I don't hear, "Daddy, let's go to the park." I don't have these daughters talking to me about any and everything. I don't have a meal to prepare for them. You know, and around this time, it's about 2015, 2016, 2017, that's when it really got bad. I'm not cooking any meals. I just want to drink. And, you know, I was still doing the responsible thing, I thought. I was still sending the money home to Ohio, and I'm just roughing it out here. So I had, let's see, most of my money's going back home to support my wife and my daughters, and I figure I can live off about $50 a week or so. Well, I tell you what, about 45 of those dollars was spent on alcohol. The other five was spent on Burger King chicken nuggets. And at that time, they was running a promotion. 10 nuggets for 99 cents. And I don't know if you ever eaten fish tank rocks, but that's what I believe fish tank rocks taste like. Burger King, 10 nuggets for 99 cents. But it didn't matter because I still had my alcohol. As a matter of fact, that's the only thing I had. I'm sitting in the apartment, empty apartment, just me and alcohol. You see, I've experienced the shame of growing up being picked on. And like I said, you know, one time when I was on the bus home in junior high school and my hair was falling out, a bus driver decided to join in on the fun. And so I ran home crying. That shame gets in your bones. So, hypersensitive to a lot of things. While my wife and girls are back in Ohio, more devastating news, you know. Wife says she's not coming back, okay? Like I said, I felt that relief. But then there was also an affair with a close friend of mine. And so me having the humanity and the decency to just say, you know what, that's a bad situation, let me walk away from that. I stayed, and I drank, and I drank over it, and I drank over it, and I continue to drink over it. You know, Memorial Day weekend is always near and dear to me, not because of the profession, but I used to love, you know, obviously, yes, Navy, military man, and remembering those that have gone before us, always. But I will say this, those 96-hour Liberty weekends were everything to me. Well, it got bad for me when I get off work on a Thursday and I have all these plans to do these things with this weekend. And I go to the Navy Exchange Package store and I buy what I want to buy. And the next thing you know, it's Tuesday morning. And I'm getting phone calls, missed calls. Then, you know, the command senior chief is knocking at my door like, "Hey, where are you?" You know, it was bad. But the strange thing about it is one time I come to I get dressed, I go to work early, and I tell my navigator, hey, ma'am, I'm here. Good, nice. And then I'm around 11 o'clock, I leave, and I go back to the apartment to take a nap. And I wake up at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and I'm getting dressed, throwing on my uniform, and I show up to work the same day, apologizing to the navigator, like, hey, ma'am, I'm sorry I showed up to work this afternoon. And she had to be looking at me like, what? Like, you were just here. Like, I don't want to continue to talk about, you know, the exploits of alcohol, because we've all heard them. We all have them. We all share them. You know, at some point I asked for help, and it took a long time for me to do that, but I did. And I entered the Navy's Substance Abuse Rehabilitation Program, SARP. Been through the treatment. Met my sponsor at a meeting there, a book study, and another gentleman. And they told me about this meeting on Wednesday night. Told me about this meeting on Saturday. So I arrived to Mount Soledad Men's in style, of course. 16-passenger van with the rest of the Sarpians, you know. And so when I arrived there, Alcoholics Anonymous felt very familiar. You see, it felt like home. I didn't have to perform. Nobody cared about my rank. Nobody cared about this thing or that thing. There was no conditions. There was no performance. There was people that cared about me just because I existed. You see, alcohol promised me these things. AA delivered them. You see, I need you to understand, I didn't discover recovery. Recovery existed in me long before I knew. Recovery felt familiar. You know, the 12 steps, did some extensive work with those in a garden with my sponsor. The solace, the peace, the serenity, you know. I realized that, you know, had I had not asked for help, I would not be here today. Because the thing that connects us, you know, this alcoholism, this disease, you know, going back to just the alcohol itself, that's what connects us, because we know that if we continue down that path, it can destroy us. I remember when I was a child, you know, a lot of the people would say, oh, he needs AA or she needs AA. As a child, I didn't understand what that meant. But when I got to my meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, like I said, it felt familiar. See, my whole life I was searching for home. I got pieces of it in the Navy. You know, I got pieces of it from my family. But when I got to AA, I got the full spread, the salad, the spaghetti, the dessert, the bottled water, the Grand Tour. I got it all. I will say, when life gets deep, my recovery gets deeper. In 2024, I was deployed in a combat zone, had some missiles inbound. During that same deployment, my wife grew distant. Come back home and find out that there is another affair. You know, I was divorced December 2025. I buried my mom in October 2025. I am raising four daughters in a high conflict co-parenting dynamic. Post-divorce litigation. And the funny thing about it is, you know, Perry Mason did not litigate divorces. Carl Winslow did not have four daughters. You know, the television shows that I enjoy, and I still do to this day, and I do not knock them, I love them. You throw on the Three Stooges, I'm there for hours watching. You know, did not prepare me for life. Because at the end of those episodes, all the problems that were there are done, wrapped up within the 30-minute time period or the hour. Real life is not like that. I need you to understand that I've been through some things. And what's touching about this particular meeting is when I came back home, you know, November, December 2024. I live in Chula Vista, and I was searching for a meeting to come to, and I came to this one on a Saturday night. I believe Mario C. was the speaker that night. Then I came back the next weekend. I believe Tom R. was the speaker that night. Then I started coming here the Wednesday afternoon meetings. So to stand here right now, delivering this speech, just lets you know, like, no matter what, I have somewhere that I can be, somewhere that I can go. My whole story is about a boy trying to find home. I found it right in this room, in many rooms just like it. You know, today, I show up for my daughters. Uncle Phil didn't do no co-parenting apps. Like, Andy Griffith did not navigate co-parenting apps. You know, and Uncle Phil did not attend the custody hearing. But here I am, you know. Today I get to live a life that I've never thought that I could have. I am accepted, and I've learned to accept myself. Just like Walter said, he found himself. You know, in this room, in these rooms, I found the exact language that I learned from my grandmother before I even knew what it was, and that's peace. The type of love that I receive in this room is words that I cannot adequately explain with words. I just feel it. Because just like my Aunt Jean, it was created. It's created. You know, I'm an alcoholic. I come from alcoholism. But due to AA, I found home and what home is supposed to be. Today I have a partner that loves me just because I exist. That's it. That's the only requirement. Just show up and breathe. Yeah, I had to make sure that I was okay to do that, you know. But I get to show up for my daughters, and I get to handle these situations that and things that I wouldn't know how to handle on my own, you know. And there's people that love me and care for me, you know. I cannot put it in words. My sponsor is here today. My grand sponsor at one point in time is here today. My partner is here today. Lots of friends and people that I know love me. Some I haven't even met or had the opportunity to introduce myself outside of me doing this speech. But I know it's all love. So I'm going to end with this. God is so amazing. You cannot come up with this because my grandmother's spaghetti. That's what we had tonight. With all the fixings. I don't know how it was determined because I was approached. Thank you, John. To lead, to do this speech months ago. So here we are now, June 6th, and it's spaghetti night. I don't know if you, I believe in God, and I have a God that I believe in that has got me through all these things, and the Alcoholics Anonymous, I cannot explain enough how much I love you. But that's just the sign right there. Spaghetti night, June 6th. Let's go. My sobriety date is June 11, 2017. And it's just amazing that someone like me could be this, you know. And I don't do it alone. I haven't done it alone. You know, when I can't carry myself or walk, there's men and women in this program that will help carry me and or tell me to keep my behind up. Let's walk. Let's go. You know, and some would tell me, no, I'm not carrying you. I will drag you along the way. And for that, I'm forever grateful. Brian Alcoholic, thank you.
Oh, wow, Brian, that was great. Thank you so much for coming to share your story with us. One more time for Brian. Thank you, Leslie, Ruben, Tim, and Walter for sharing your birthdays with us tonight. Yay. Thank you to the Women's Auxiliary and the Men of the House for a great dinner. Let's circle up.